You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
The snap, the kick, it's been blocked again! How about it? It's been blocked again! He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone! It's a touchdown! And the Gators have won the game! Tyreek Cleveland, how about it? I can't believe what I just saw!
Dropping back the throw, pops and fires the ball.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your boy Corey.
It's Dan.
Delatori.
And your boy Jay Scott 2-5, baby. What it do, y'all boys?
What up, 2-5 on the run from the cartels? They can't catch him. He was stuck in Mexico and went, whoop, gone.
Hey, man, I'm glad to be back, man. I was definitely scared for my life, and that's
free 2-5, man.
But Mexico is not a place for me, man. But teach someone who likes it, and you know, go do your thing. But they will never be seeing 2-5 again. I can assure you that one.
We call that
I'm supposed to be in Mexico in 5 weeks.
Sounds bad. Sounds
challenge.
You're safe, bro. Big T. Nobody touch Americans, bro. You good, man?
Yeah. He got close safe, when Jordan was there, though. He got close.
I think Jordan's is a secret spy. Yeah, he's working for the government.
Got a beanie on in West Palm Beach. Like, anything is possible. CIA.
Hey, we had a little cold for 2 days ago.
Jordan, were you like locked in or locked down?
Yeah. No, man, not really. So actually, when I found out the news, I was actually headed to like an island doing like a little excursion for the day. So I started panicking for real because I'm like, yo, what if they're like giving us alerts at the hotel? Like, you know, like what's going on, man? Like, we're tripping for real. I'm trying to get back. We're literally headed out there. I'm telling the driver, like, man, I'm trying to go back now. I know, what are you planning to do? We got to stay here for like 4 more hours, I think, you know, because we like stopped it off and snorkeled and then you continue to the island. So he was like, no, man, I can't go back. Can't go back for gas. You'll be okay. And like, I told him, obviously, I guess they knew, but they just don't care. Right. Of course they don't. So we stayed there for a little while and we came back and everything was pretty much normal, man, which was kind of weird and awkward. And then maybe like an hour or two, once we was at our room, we got a notification that our flight got canceled. So I'm like, wow, the fact that our flight is canceled, now we got to extend another day. So let me go downstairs and, you know, let's try to see what that looks like price wise and that this, that and the such. And I bring it up to the lady again. I'm like, hey, you know, our flight got canceled. It said the weather, honestly, but it, you know, spazzing. I'm lying. I'm like, I don't know nothing about no weather. I said other flights are coming in and out. I don't know anything about a weather fan, but, you know, I heard there's some stuff going on why the flight is canceled. Like, is there any way that we can, like, you know, work out something price wise? Like, what's the safety on this? Like, you want to put me in another hotel? Like, I'm a good customer. I've been here since Thursday. I ain't in the president's suite, but I got your best package here. I mean, like, come on, treat me like a player. That's all I was asking. So they ended up kind of looking out for us. You know, they act like they prorated some, but they gave us a pretty decent deal for the extra night or two. And then we ended up getting on like a Spirit flight back and just flew into Orlando and then drove back here. But it was hectic, man. I mean, everybody was pretty much calm, though, for the most part. But I don't know. Too sketchy for me. I don't know. I can't do that again. Yeah.
Yeah, that's creepy as hell, man.
You're in the unique situation as a husband there who didn't want to go on the trip. And then it plays out exactly as you said. What is the level of gloating? How far do you push it to be like, hey, babe, we did that trip that you wanted. And we killed the cartel, and now the cartel is coming for us. Coming for us. Straight up. This is Maybe this is not the
Jordan maybe personally killed the cartel.
Jordan's like, maybe Jamaica was dope. Like, I wanted us to go. Maybe we should just go to Jamaica.
Yeah, I'm definitely picking the next one.
If you guys want to end up like me, then you can go down that route, Jordan. Other than that, it sounds like Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty quiet for the most part. No, I ain't rubbed nothing in. I think she knew.
Oh, women don't care about being wrong, man. Like, they don't care.
They will remember the time you were wrong 7 years ago.
Yes.
Oh, really? You're mad about this right wrong. Now? Remember what you did back in 2019?
No. Yeah. He's going to gaslight you as soon as you bring up, hey, we shouldn't have came here. Oh, that's what you're thinking right now? Like, you're
gonna... Exactly.
You're getting in a whole other world of trouble.
Yeah, man. You just got to let it ride.
Well, she know what it is. What's what they say? What's understood doesn't need to be said or something like that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Shit. Bring it up next time y'all booking the next vacation. You got to bring it up, man.
I don't think you'll be going back to Mexico anytime soon.
Mm-mm.
How's everybody's weekend?
It was good. Went to the St. Pete Grand Prix. You know, I've lived here 12 and a half years. It was my first time ever going. So that was a ton of fun. We were in the infield. I'm not a huge race car fan. I mean, I get why people like it. IndyCar, F1, NASCAR, all of that. I just never really grew up with it. But it was awesome. It was a little warm, but other than that, it was electric, man. It was, you know, watching cars go 170, 180 miles an hour through downtown St. Pete every minute for 100 laps is just really cool to watch and see, you know, probably, I don't know, 20, 30, 40,000 people that were out there. But it was an electric time. We had a really good time. I drank some wine last night, but other than that, just a relatively low key. Still house shopping a little bit, so still trying to be an adult and grown up and do all that. So got to get out of the high rise. Got to get out of the high rise. That'll be easier said than done. We're on month 5 now.
Yeah, it's a stressful one.
You're muted, Nick.
Shout out to Nick.
People are not coming off the prices, but there are more sellers than buyers right now.
No, they're coming off prices. It's just, you know, the listeners don't care. But we did accidentally walk into a wrong open house, though, and that budget was about double what I'm looking for. I fell in love. So if any of our sponsors want to up the bag a little bit, that would be helpful. But yeah, that was a mistake because then you're like, yeah, this is it. If I
have every house you go into, you're comparing it to that one.
Yeah,
Brady's house. You're comparing it to Tom Brady's house that you missed.
Yeah, I'm not looking at Tom Brady's house. Let's be clear. Let's set the air here. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for a Tom Brady style house. But you walk.
What if you sold your vacation home on Star Island and then you could
Nick, do it? If you could keep my personal business out of the internet. It was a great weekend. It's a great weekend. Looking forward to relaxing a little bit more this weekend.
I ain't doing anything special,
man.
Oh, go ahead.
Nothing. I ain't doing anything special. Go ahead.
Canceled. We had some pregnancy stuff that happened during the week, so I canceled my down. Lowe's fine. Baby's fine. But had to go to the hospital, so canceled the Miami trip. Watched it from Gainesville. Was at the Saturday basketball game. Got to see Tennessee really, really fumbled the bag. So if Tennessee would have held on to beat Alabama at one point, they're up like double digits. Florida would have outright won the SEC. They cut the nets down anyway. They clinched at least a share of the SEC. So was at that. Got to see the celebration. Cut the nets down. Guys got shirts, hats. Senior day Tuesday. If Florida wins, then they are standalone SEC champions. Crazy.
What a beatdown. What a beatdown over Arkansas. We'll talk a little bit more about it, but what a just a top to bottom, just an absolute drubbing of John Calipari and the Arkansas team.
A lot of greasy talk going on the sideline.
The team looks incredible right now.
Yeah.
The three-point shooting keeps getting better each month. I just saw like the numbers month by month of the season. Keeps getting better. Tough to beat when they're shooting like that with that front court that they have. Tough to beat. So it's been cool. It's a really tight group, like just like guys that hang out. So fun run. Unfortunately, won't be. I'm grounded. Nice. Baby coming in April, grounded for March Madness. Will not be traveling like I did last year for it. But maybe if first round's in Tampa, Dan, maybe I can talk my wife into a
it's right there. if we can make it, it's right there. If they pick Tampa for the Gators, and I think they will. Every bracket that I've seen.
It'll be interesting because like last year, you would have gotten like a better draw location wise if you're Florida, if you were the number 1-2 seed instead of the number 4-1 seed. So it'll be interesting because Florida is in a place right now where they could win out and be a 1 seed potentially. Again, the number 4-1 seed. And then you're getting, you know, it would depend on who else is where and where they, you know, send them. But Tampa would be dope. I think that would be just 2 home games in Tampa.
It's what, really a battle with UConn for that 4th-1 spot? I mean,
Michigan and Duke are pretty locked in at 1s. Houston's like a 1-2-ish. UConn just had, I think, a convincing win over St. John's. It should be fun. The team is fun. They're definitely starting to peak, and this is the time you want to peak.
Yeah, no, they look great. Team's playing really well. A couple games left before you get to the SEC tournament. That'll move quickly. And then, if the Gators do play in Tampa, they'll play the Friday-Sunday round of 64 and round of 32, potentially here in Tampa, if not a couple other locations. But Gator Nation's everywhere. So I know the Gator fans will show out. If you're looking for tickets to Tampa, I think the tickets are already sold out. So you have to go secondary market for that. I think a lot of people, Arizona is the other number 1 seed. So tickets are going to be pricey. So I would start looking sooner rather than later if that's the world that you want to get into. I think Florida Victorious is going to do something. Some people on the message board asked if Stadium and Gale is going to do anything. We'll figure it out. Let's get there first, and then we'll talk about what those details look like. But
Dan will be at the local bakery handing out loaves that he's made. totally different right. Tailgate now. Totally different pregame.
Yeah. Yeah, you find me at the Edition Hotel. Let's see. Corey, let's get a quick ad read for Brett Insurance. I'll do one, and then we'll hop on before we have Pete Nakos of On3 joining us, and then we have new defensive backs or cornerbacks coach Brendan Harris joining us at the top of the hour. So, Corey, go ahead.
Stadium and Gale is powered by the great folks at Brett Insurance and Financial Services. Anything you need insured, from the Panhandle to the Keys, my man Greg can definitely save you some money. Best of the best when it comes to car coverage, life insurance, motorcycles, boats, anything with wheels, he definitely can insure. RVs, hit my man Greg up at BruntInsurance.com or give him a call at 954-589-2204. Big coverage, big policies.
Greg, what it do, baby?
And one time for our friends over at Home Field Apparel, Art and Cheese, not Home Field Apparel, the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. Dan, pay attention while you're doing things. Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group, 855-652-1377. This is a group of attorneys that used to work for the insurance companies and now work to protect you against those pesky insurance companies. So property insurance issues, pipe leaks, water damage, wind damage, hail damage, hurricanes, sinkholes, whatever it might be. Go visit our friends over at the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. That's DykusBurkeLaw.com, 855-652-1377, DykusBurkeLaw.com. Nick, while we wait for Pete Nakos to join us here in the next 30 minutes, or in the next, pardon me, 5 minutes, why don't you go over baseball? Again, a 10-game win streak right now, I think, for the Gators. A couple wins during the midweek, and then a shortened series against Miami due to weather.
Yeah, Miami avoided a 3-game sweep, got 2 games swept instead. Really strong start from Liam Peterson Friday night. I talked about like big games for him, big moments. Talked about it last week and thought that, hey, this is one. On the road against Miami is one. Pitched really well against him last year. What would he do this year? I think he got the no decision. I'm pulling the box score up now.
He did get a no decision.
Yeah. no decision. But Brendan Lawson homers Friday night. He was co-SEC player of the week. And Liam Peterson was really good. Some terrible BABIP, which is batted ball in play luck. There was like a check swing double. There's a ball that's just dribbled down the line that stays fair, that ends up, you know, scoring runs. But he goes 5 2/3, gives up 6 hits, 2 earned runs, walks 1, struck out 8, 98 pitches. And then Jackson Barbary comes in. He is lighting up radar guns. He was up to 100. Florida goes ahead and wins on Friday night. Saturday, I was like double dutying Saturday, the end of the baseball game, which seemed like it was never going to end. But Florida won 8-4, jumped out to a 4-0 lead, ended up scoring 3 runs in the ninth to really pull away and finish 8-4. Brendan Lawson again, just really good. He's starting to look like, a lot of people have talked about him as a 1-1. But Saturday night, you get Ricky Reath comes in after Aiden King leaves with an injury, Ernesto Lugo control, and then Josh Rittenauer, who's a redshirt freshman, comes in, hit 102 on the gun. I don't know that he necessarily knows where the ball is going exactly every time, but an electric arm. Obviously throwing 102 miles an hour, an electric arm. Florida, I think, is up to number 9 in the country, and they will get FAU, FAMU, and then Holy Cross, I want to say. Yeah, High Point, same thing.
Florida owns the longest winning streak in college baseball right now? Did I read that?
I think it's – I don't know that it's the longest winning streak. I think they have the longest series winning streak, something like that. They've won
I thought it was the longest winning streak this season, because I think there's a couple of undefeated teams that have played less games, so they've obviously got a better record in terms of not having a loss. But after losing the first game of the season, I've rattled off a 10 in a row, 11 in a row.
Yeah, but, you know, once you cancel the season after the opening day, all of this stuff is just for fun. So
yeah,
it doesn't really matter. But they've won 11 in a row, 11-1 record. And Miami, I think the biggest thing was that Miami was putting up, like, for Miami, which is, in my opinion, one of the blue bloods of college baseball. I mean, I think they have 5 or 6 World Series. Like, they're one. Miami's one of the blue bloods of college baseball, and they were putting up historic offensive numbers. And then you found out, okay, maybe they were just playing bad teams and taking advantage of playing bad teams, because they saw quality arms this week and didn't really do much with it. Scored 6 runs in 2 games. And really the 2 runs on Friday were some pretty lucky circumstances that led to them crossing the plate. Missed being down there. I hadn't missed a Florida-Miami baseball series in person since I started covering in 2013. But that's dad life. Kids will change your life.
Yeah, huge win for the Gators. Look to rattle off a number of more wins over the next couple of weeks. SEC play will start, at the end of the month, Nick? Middle of the month?
Yeah. You get High Point this weekend, and that is the last non-SEC weekend. So this weekend you get 5 games, FAU, Florida A&M, High Point. And then a week from tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, a week from today, it's Florida State at Condren Family Ballpark. And then South Carolina comes to open the SEC slate March 13th. That's crazy.
Awesome. Well, with that, we are going to do one brief ad read, and then we've got our friend Pete Nakos from On3 joining us. If you're listening to the show and you want a really cool cup, this is the Sadie Miguel one that we have. All the boys have them. From our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks. Go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. They just dropped an email today if you bought something from them before. A lot of great designs, not only for the University of Florida, but a ton of other colleges around the country. They've got some really cool baseball and basketball ones that just dropped recently. So go check them out. Great product. It's going to keep your hot drinks hot, your cold drinks cold. Go check out GameTimeSidekicks.com. Use promo code STADIUM15 to get 15% off your order. And with that, we welcome Pete Nakos, college football insider extraordinaire, and my dear friend that I've become close with over the last few months, as the Gators have been looking to to hire a new coach. And so obviously all the drama that associated with that, Pete and I were texting daily. Even when the internet thought I disappeared, Pete and I were on the horn together. So Pete, welcome to Stadium Gale, brother.
Thanks for having me on. What's up, Corey?
What's up with it, man?
Hey, Ben. All right.
I can't complain at all. How about yourself, Pete?
Good.
Good, man. Good. Well, Pete, you are a college football and coaching insider. I know everybody's kind of heard the story of, you know, how John Summerall came here. And you have some ties to John Summerall and other folks around the country. And so you were in it as much as anybody with the Gators coaching search. The story has kind of been rehashed and told already. Is there anything else from the John Summerall hire that maybe fans would be surprised to know, or some of your perspective on that hire?
It just took a lot of twists and turns. You know, like at the beginning, it really felt like he was going to be the next head coach at Auburn for a minute. And that was just mostly because for so long, I think he thought that that's the job he wanted. And then Florida came open and it became apparent very quickly that Florida wanted him. And I think the minute that really sunk in, I think it became clear that was something he really wanted to do. And then there's some peaks and valleys along the way, right? My guy, Zach Abelberti over at Gators Online reported he was going to interview with them. And that kind of turned into a pretty crazy 24 hours. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, John Summerall is as happy as he's ever been to be the head coach of Florida. And I think that he feels confident that he can be the guy to get this place back to what it was. And I'm sure we talk about it plenty here, but from his conversations with Urban Meyer and more conversations like that, I just think that he has a lot of confidence that Florida has everything it's going to need to win in this next era of college football.
Part of was that, there like, go ahead, Nick. Real quick, part of that, the Kentucky, you know, talking to the guys over at KSR and the On3 Network, they were like so upset that I thought, all right, they're trolling. Like, I don't know anything about John Summerall yet. And like then talking to them, and they were all like mad. They were like, no, we wanted to fire Mark Stoops to go bring John Summerall back to Lexington. And like talking to some of the reporters over there, I was like, okay, it just seemed like you guys were like really overdoing it. And we have no idea who this guy is before even he showed up. But I think that was something that stuck out to me even before I met John, of like, okay, Kentucky fans really wanted this guy and wanted to fire Mark Stoops for him before he was even on, you know, probably any of the reporters here in Gainesville's radar.
Yeah, I think people who met John Summerall when he was in Lexington met someone who, you know, kind of – obviously, Mark Stoops was the head coach, but was just so highly thought of by every coach on that staff. So, like, you go back and talk to people, and he was the guy who built relationships with all those coaches. You know, I think those families were really close at Kentucky. And the other thing, too, that you guys have gotten to know about John Summerall is his intensity. And I think that is, you know, I guess part of what was left at Kentucky is his want to win and the intensity that he brought into kind of all facets of what he did on and off the field. I think that is what really endeared him to Kentucky fans.
Go ahead, Corey.
Pete, what was your initial opinion on him Summerall for the Florida job? Did you think it was a good fit? And how do you feel about it now?
I think when I initially heard his name tied to it, right, we were at a stage where Lane Kiffin at, you know, Florida was still alive, right? That wasn't exactly dead. So I think initially when I heard that, I was thinking, okay, that would be an awesome option if things go a certain way. And then it went that way. And I got a chance to kind of wrap my head around it. And I think that I've come to like it more and more as time's gone on. And then, I mean, you guys know this, but like he killed that opening press conference and he's mm-hmm. like, he's won the offseason to this point. So, you know, from people who know him really well, who I've talked to, I think there's always confidence that he could do an SEC job. But I think how things have gone the last, 8 to 10 weeks, I think have really blown away people more. And I remember just from talking to people around him, they were saying when he get the job, you know, there's some Florida fans who weren't like all in initially. There's some skepticism and they're like, just wait and watch how he does this. And I think he's won over anyone who really hasn't been the biggest fan from the get-go.
Pete, do you know what, and you know, I know Gator fans will say it's clear and obvious, but whenever you're making a job change, there's a lot that goes into it, maybe beyond just perception. Do you know what it was about Florida that made him flip a switch from Auburn over to Florida?
Yeah, I don't know if it was ever as simple as he had two job offers and he chose Florida. I think I need to go make a lot of phone calls to, like, confidently say that, but what I can't tell you is that.
All right, we'll have you back on at 9 p.m., Pete.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick.
We got time, bro.
Yeah, I bet you do. The one thing I can confidently tell you, though, is that I can't remember what day of the week it was, but whenever Florida did actually fly out to New Orleans and sit down with him, and Dan Wartful called him and Urban Meyer called him, and I think those conversations and the belief that those guys shared and John made the difference in you know, his belief that he could get things right at Florida.
You're tied into a lot of coaches and agents, and what's the perception of Florida outside of the Florida fan base?
Like right now or before the job?
Well, like before, like when they're in their coaching search, or just like what's the overall perception about the job at Florida? Because, you know, there was a ton of openings this year. A lot of Gator fans said, hey, we have the number one job in the country. There's a lot of, you know, other folks that were like, the floor is nowhere near the number one job in the country. But what ultimately is the perception of the Florida Gators head coaching job?
I mean, the perception of the job when I opened was, hey, it's going to be one of the top jobs that opens. And then obviously things, you know, LSU opens and Kentucky opens, and I'm not comparing Florida and Kentucky, and that's not a shot at anyone. My point is, like, I think a lot of different things opened that changed some things, but I think that the continuous belief was that Florida had the resources necessary to compete and to make the team playoff and win in the transfer portal and things like that. You know, the other thing about Florida too is I just think that there needed to be a coach who had the belief in themselves to go get it done, just because it had not as been as recent when you look at some other places of winning at the highest level.
What? Talk to us a little bit about John Summerall in what you think the first couple months have been. They attacked the portal with a lot more effort, it seems like, than the previous staff. And obviously you have a lot of turnover. I think the Gators have 56 new players on their team. They were able to secure what a lot of fans considered were their top five returning players. You know, some might argue if that's, you know, might interchange one or two. And then recruiting seems to have done well closing out that class. What do you think? Are you surprised at all? Or is this just what you anticipated the first couple months of the Summerall era looking like at Florida?
I think I think everything's kind of checked out the way I thought. I'll be honest though, I was just so curious to see how things were going to be handled with DJ Lagway and how that was all going to play out and what the decision was going to be. And, you know, obviously John and DJ sat down. I believe DJ's father was there too. And, you know, there was just kind of a conclusion that DJ was probably going to go a separate way, and that's how things broke. And there's a lot of confidence that Tramell Jones can be the starter. And then they obviously go out and get Aaron Filo, who knows offense coordinator Buster Faulkner's system. And you know, the biggest storyline this spring is going to be that quarterback competition. But I think the biggest win of the portal, though, for Florida by far was getting Jaden Woods and Jaden Baugh to stay. I think that so much in this portal era, and I probably play a contributing role in this, is we put such a focus on guys who are going in the portal and where they land. And sometimes I think we forget about the biggest retention wins, and those were two of the biggest retention wins, I think, maybe in all of college football. And then the other thing, too, is Eric Singleton declares to go in the draft and then he ends up in the portal. And then all of a sudden we hear a lot about Texas Tech throwing some money around, and somehow Florida gets it done before he ever steps foot on campus. And we'll see how, you know, what Eric Singleton does for this offense, but he obviously knows what's going on with Buster Faulkner's system. And I think that there is a little bit of surprise around the SEC that Florida was able to pull that one off.
Hey, you're super plugged into the portal as well. Just how, cause like, I can't speak on it too much from like my standpoint with my job, but like you mentioned, like Jaden Woods and Jaden Baugh, And like, because I feel like because Jaden Bob doesn't go into the portal, some fans are like, oh, well, he never went in. But that doesn't mean that, that people aren't talking to you or talking to your agent. Just how crazy was, and especially this portal too, where it's the first one where you don't have a spring portal. So there's more of a sense of urgency. There's guys with new coaches who used to be like, well, I don't need to go in the portal because I can see how spring ball shakes out. How wild was this portal season, just in the grand scheme and how you've seen the last couple play out?
Yeah, so, you know, I think when you look at Jaden Boss specifically, you look at a running back who, if he had gone in, probably would have been a top five player in the portal. It would probably have been paid like anywhere between $2 to $3 million, I'd say off the top of my head, and probably had suitors from across the entire country, if not the top 10 in of every program in the sport. So you also think about all the time between, you know, when Billy Napier's fired to when John Summerall's hired to when the portal actually opens to when the portal closes. And, you know, I think you're looking at like a 6 to 8 week span. And for Florida to hold on to him, I mean, it's a lot of bumps along the way. And I know John Summerall's kind of come out and given the story, but he laid his father down to rest. And then he like immediately hopped on a plane with the entire family, convinced Jaden Bosch to stay in Florida. And that's kind of how, you know, those conversations started. So it's a wild story about how they held on to him. And I mean, literally like every top 10, 15 program in the country was showing interest, I'd say.
Go ahead, Jordan.
Oh, you know, I was going to ask, how do you feel about just the transfer portal in general, and like how influential do you think Twitter is to that? You know, I look on Twitter and I see a lot of guys, some small school, he literally has posted his highlight tape maybe about 5 or 6 times, and like, I've officially entered the transfer portal, maybe screenshot his little email of him entering the portal and stuff. You know, I just want to know how much of an impact does Twitter make? I know you obviously do a lot of like articles and stuff as well. You primarily don't work on Twitter, but obviously Twitter is a big face for On3, and that's where a lot of people see you guys. So I just want to know how big of an influence do you think it really has on the recruitment of the transfer portal and everything that goes into it?
I think, so, you know, on the back end, like so many guys go in the portal that I think that Twitter leads to some programs probably seeing some guys go in the portal, which is crazy to say. But I think that's reality because there's only so many people behind the program trying to work it and get guys in. I think Twitter has probably definitely impacted the volume of guys going in. Probably because you hear of the success stories and you hear of all the, you know, there's probably like 20 guys in every portal class who make it a certain amount of money, like life-changing money for their family. So yeah, I'm sure there's probably some kids out there who see that on Twitter and be like, I can go do that. Now, that might not be reality. They might be hearing a story from their agents that might not exactly be the case. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure Twitter has played a role. But yeah, I definitely don't work for Twitter either. That's like I have fans being like, I mean, but Dan and Nick know this, but it's like I work for On3 and I'm extremely grateful for all the opportunities. And we have to sell subscriptions so I can like put food on the table and work and do my job. And people are like so frustrated that, God forbid, that we try to sell $19.99 for a year's subscription.
Hey, Grok, what does this say? Hey, Grok. Yeah. Oh, my
God. Is this true?
Yeah. That's the worst.
That's the worst one. Like, you really believe it. Yeah, like this hard.
Yeah. Hey, who is your biggest ops, Grok or No 3?
Yes.
No comment. Yeah, hey, I don't know, Corey. You might be like top 15
people
on
here.
Days, but
it's your, well, you good know, time. You're on the show.
Is Corey one of your ops?
I don't know. Me, Corey, gone out a little bit. It's all good though. It's all good. He's called me out on fair stuff. That's fair. I got
sure. I just I like to provide balance to the timeline. I would say right.
I think Corey's biggest op might be that he has so many fans of other fan bases that if he quote tweets something negative against a different fan base and they hadn't seen it yet, now they've seen it and now they will be attacking you. And it's just, he's just providing a service to Gator fans. Oh, hey, look, Florida State's poor. Do you see this? Florida State tried to get a kid out of the portal with welfare stamps. Like, And then you've got.
I retired from those days, Nick. That's the artist formerly known as Silk, man.
Okay, Prince.
what do you think? Do you think we have a legit quarterback battle here with Philo and Tremel? Like, what's your thoughts on that?
I'll be honest, I didn't think so. But the more conversations I've had, I think that the staff has been pretty impressed with what. But I can't talk by what Tremel Jones has shown since the new staff's gotten there. And I think that I don't want to say he's like above expectations, but I just think that there's, you know, what he can do as an athlete and then mix that in. It sounds like he's learning the playbook extremely well to this point. I think it's going to be a real quarterback battle. I think at the very least, they want Tremel Jones to push Aaron Fowler to the point where he doesn't feel comfortable at times this spring. How it all shakes out, I'm not really sure about that one, though, just yet. I mean, do I think that Aaron Fowler is the presumptive starter? Yes. Do I also, you know, see a world where Tremel Jones beats him out? Yes. So I think it's real. I think we'll really know if it's real, though, by the end of the spring.
Mm.
That'd be interesting to me too, because we're very familiar with quarterback battles. I think the last time we really have one was like Graham Mertz's second year, and before that was like Kyle Trask in 2020. Other than that, it's a quarterback battle. Jordan played running back at Florida for 3 years and probably had 37 quarterbacks. It'll be interesting to me because I do think there is something to like, hey, you name your guy at the end of spring, and then that's your guy. He leads them through player run drills in the summer. He's your starting guy when fall camp starts. But talking to the staff, like I think unless it's just lip service, which I don't think it is, there's competition at every spot. And like John Summerall doesn't care how much your NIL contract is. You're going to play based on what you do in practice, what you're saying in the film room and your meeting rooms. And those guys are going to play. So we'll see. I do think we've talked about it a bunch on our show that Philo has a leg up because he was in the system. But like I think they've been super impressed with Tremel's arm strength. You mentioned his athletic ability. So yeah, that's something definitely a quarterback battle to watch.
One thing I've heard about Tremel too is that there's a want there to compete, which I think, you know, obviously everyone's gonna roll their eyes and say, like, yeah, obviously, but I think that's something that really jumped off the minute the staff met him, is that he wanted to be at Florida and he wants to compete.
I mean, the portal's open, and like there's only quarterbacks the position too that you go into the portal. You've got three wide receivers, four wide receivers on the field at a time. Running back can be by committee. You're playing multiple linebackers, multiple DBs. There's only one quarterback that plays, so you see so many quarterbacks go in the portal. And like a team would have offered Tremel Jones NIL money in a starting job. So I think it says something about his competitiveness that he stayed.
Yeah. I like the kid, man. I hope and think that he'll get it done. Just off of talking to him, I think he's a pretty smart kid. I just don't know, man. I feel like, how do y'all feel about it? What do you think the best step is as far as like who you think you should start? Because you feel like Aaron follows that guy for you because he has a experience, kind of a win now situation, because we have the talent to kind of win now. But then you look on the development side of like, should I just play Tremel and just want to develop this guy and, you know, do it for the program, knowing that we're in it for the long run with him. So I don't know, man. I think that's a tough situation for those coaches.
I think both are like inexperienced enough to make it a true legit quarterback battle. I think Philo has the upside and the advantage because he's been in the system a few more years, but Tremel's talents, you know, what he brings to the table makes it an interesting battle. And I like that even Summerall said that the battle will go past spring, right? I think if it goes past spring and it's a true legit fall QB battle, you know, that should give Tremel enough time, who we already know is a smart kid, to catch up on the playbook. And then it's the even playing field in the fall. So if it goes past the spring, I think it's like Pete said, I think it's a legit quarterback battle because Tremel's smart enough to catch up on the playbook. And I think the grounds will be as even as it can be. I don't think it'll be completely even, but that's the best you can get, most you can ask.
They also play Fort Atlantic and Campbell to open the year, so there's definitely some like room to play both guys the first 2 weeks of the season.
Right. Slightly different than the last 3 years of Miami, Utah.
Yeah.
Pete, I want to go back to Buster Faulkner, because I think that that was a name that that everybody was kind of surprised. He was interviewing for what, Memphis, Southern Miss, which is his alma mater. How was Florida, you know, able to get him away from those interviews and away from Georgia Tech, where there is a lot of comfort over to Florida, you know, and make the splash hire that Gator fans have been clamoring for, an offensive coordinator for, I don't know, since Dan Mullen left and the end of Urban Meyer's tenure at Florida?
So, you know, so John Summerall gets the job, and, you know, like one of the first immediate questions is, who are the coordinators going to be? And it becomes pretty quick, like obviously very quickly, that Brad White's probably going to be the DC hire. It's someone that he knows well from Kentucky. It's someone that he wants to bring to Florida. So like that was kind of how that worked itself out. But then you hear like Joey Halsey at Tennessee a little bit, you hear Buster Faulkner, and it kind of feels like, you know, Summerall kind of pulled Buster out of his back pocket a little bit, just because, you know, it kind of did come out of left field. Like, and not in terms of like, you know, the news broke and no one saw it coming, but like in a 48 hour period, it went from like, okay, this is a name, to like, okay, this is probably going to be the hire, to the hire's done. It's definitely obviously someone that Brent Key didn't want to lose at Georgia Tech. Like, I mean, he's extremely well, highly thought of, who has had a lot to do with the Haynes King success the last couple of years, and who is, you know, widely considered to be a future head coach. He was far down the line at Southern Miss a year ago. You mentioned Memphis. There's a couple other jobs too. Like, he's definitely interviewed extremely well and had some opportunities to be a head coach. But I think in this day and age and in this climate, and we've seen it, you can go from being a really good SEC offense coordinator to being a head coach. You look at Will Stein just did, going from Oregon to Kentucky, and what in that vein. And I think that Buster Faulkner thinks that he can, you know, maybe follow that same pipeline. And I think that's an opportunity that Florida proves. Now, obviously, to do that, this Florida offense is going to have to look a little different than it has the last couple of years. But there's some confidence that he can do it. And now he's got to figure out who his quarterback is. So that'll be interesting to follow.
Cool. Any more questions, guys?
Last one, man. What do you think about just the trend of NIL, transfer portal, like, you know, the future of it? I seen my man Josh Pate sat down with the head man in charge to talk about it a little bit. But what's your overall thoughts of, like, government wise, like, do we get some federal change? What's your opinion?
So there's supposed to be a college sports roundtable on Friday in DC at the White House. There's obviously some other things going on across the world, so I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Hey, man, level of priorities here, man.
Yeah, exactly. I think at the end of the day, though, you know, the biggest things you're going to hear talked about in the next 2-3 years is going to be, does Congress step in? Is that really a realistic option? Are athletes going to, you know, be classified as employees, so then you can actually have contracts and hold athletes to certain accountability measures that would be in their contract? Or are you going to see collective bargaining and make sure that athletes aren't employees, which is, like, you know, collective bargaining is what you get all across the, you know, professional sports. And that is how, you know, when you collect a bargain, then the athletes are agreeing to penalties if they violate rules, and schools are, you know, agreeing to a set of rules that they can probably be fined or things like that. So all that said, though, in the meantime, it's kind of a mess. And you get a lot of schools doing whatever they want to do to win immediately. And you have some schools who are trying to follow by the rules because they're trying to craft the rules for the future. But then, you know, I think the toughest thing right now about college football is, you know, you guys just saw Billy Napier get fired. Like, it's all about, what have you done for me lately? And the only way that you can win these days, or the way it feels like the only way you can win at the highest level, or at least be in the conversation, is to spend at an extremely high rate. Now, obviously, what Indiana just did and Kurt Cignetti did, like, they didn't have the highest payroll in the sport. It was around $20 million. And I think a mix of that, too, though, is just because of how experienced they were and, like, the amount of, you know, veteran guys on that roster. So I think maybe that could be one path to winning. But the other path to winning that has obviously seemed to, you know, work recently is spending a ton of money. So it's interesting. There's going to have to be some answers at some point. The last thing I'll say is it just doesn't feel like college football is at, its final evolution, right? Like, this doesn't feel like the final product of college football right now. So how do we get there is probably the biggest question that every AD and coach are kind of thinking about behind the scenes right now.
Hmm. You think it's going to come from Congress before it comes from the NCAA or a conference?
I wish I could tell you, Dan, because I think I'd make a lot of money off that bet, but I really don't know.
Oh, man. Well, Pete, it's always a pleasure. Everybody knows where to follow you, but just drop where everybody can follow you on Twitter and read your articles. You do fantastic work.
Thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, I'm at On3, and yeah, just hit us up on On3.com. At On3 is our new X handle. That's a big one for us. No more On3 Sports, just On3. And then I'm at Pete Nako. So thanks for having me on, guys. Have a great night.
Awesome. All right, Pete.
Thanks, guys.
All right,
Corey. I didn't know you were Pete had you classified as ops.
I think all the On3 and 247 boys, man. I might be ops to all of them.
Hey, by the way, he said what's up to you when he came in. That's
not what yeah, yeah.
Up to him, nobody else. I see what type of time is going on right now. I know it when I see it now.
Oh god. Nah, that's hilarious, man. Shout out to Pete, man. Pete good at what he does, man. I'm good at what I do as well.
Yes. You guys are both good and you're very respective and also very different lanes.
Jordan walked by his wife in Cancun, goes, "What's up? You enjoying this vacation?" There was that same tone. What's up, Corey?
Right, I was like, what is going on? I peeped it up after all, then it came okay, the light. I'm like, oh, okay.
Sometimes people think I have like a personal beef with them because I
just
like,
you just like, on that trolling.
Yes, man.
I tried to give it out there. I was like, sometimes he just quote tweets you and he's got other fan bases that maybe hasn't
seen your tweet. Yeah.
And now they're angry. I tried to give you an out. He's working on the spin.
Pete gets it. I'm pretty sure Berg put them on my game a little bit too. Like they got some in-house information.
That's they have somebody that knows you quite well over there. Let them know, hey, this is all jokes, shenanigans, man. But we appreciate Pete. I know that he's a busy guy.
Before we get our next one on, can you, anyone here, Dan probably, T.I. came out with some song that made I was like, yeah, yo, this is early 2000s. T.I., what's up?
T.I. going crazy.
I didn't know it was a diss track. Why is he dissing 50? Did 50 say something about Tip?
It's a long story, man. It's about his wife.
Classic.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole family dissing now. It's like, you know, the Jackson 5 got together and went in the studio, man.
We're back to beefing. Uh-huh.
Back to beef.
I just like the dope tracks, bro. Like T.I. in Shape. Like he sound like 25-year-old Tip, man. So I love the music. We're not gonna get any music from 50 Cent. That's just what it is. But.
No, 50 Cent is a billionaire, and T.I. has been keeping his career alive by doing stand-up comedy recently. I'm a huge T.I. fan.
You guys doing stand-up?
I almost went and saw him. He was at Ybor a couple years ago. Bad. He's a stand-up comic. I think he's back. I think he's back in the studio though.
Yeah, he's back in.
I think you can do a full tour as yourself, T.I. or Clifford Harris, as a comedian. But then the word gets out that maybe this
isn't that track was. Whatever that track was, sent me down nostalgia lane. I was going back listening to like T-Pain with.
I did the same thing, bro.
Bro, I heard that track and I was like, "Ooh, I'm back in high school. I'm back in high school."
I would play trap music. I played everything, bro. I just ran through all of it, man. All the nostalgic tracks. And it was like, "Yeah, they're like the king."
I think Corey and I are the only two people here that went to the Trap Music Museum. So that makes Corey and I the kings of trap music.
That's what that make us.
Well, Dan certainly.
We were there. I mean, we had Jeezy, T.I. I mean, we were going through the entire Atlanta catalog when we were.
It was a thing. It was a thing.
Yeah, 2020 SEC championship. What a time that was! What a time that was!
In the middle of a pandemic, by the way.
In the middle of a pandemic, yeah, we went to the zoo and we're wearing masks. With that, our next guest, Brandon Harris, has joined, so we're just going to do one quick ad read for our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Go visit homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code STADIUMANDGALE, all one word. We'll get you 20% off of your order. Again, that's homefieldapparel.com. Six pages of Florida Gators t-shirts, and they have jackets and quarter zips and all sorts of stuff. They release stuff throughout the entire year. Go check them out if you haven't recently. They're leaning into baseball, a little bit of basketball. Homefieldapparel.com, promo code Stadium and Gale at checkout. And with that, we welcome our friend Brandon Harris, new cornerbacks coach for the University of Florida. Welcome, Brandon Harris, to Stadium and Gale.
What's going on, guys? Can y'all hear me pretty decent?
Here you go.
Okay, I'm excited, man. Thank y'all for having me. I'm just getting set up in a new spot. So this is my first real test on my internet. So I'm about to see how I hold up.
It looks solid, man.
I love it.
I was wondering if you would still be at the office, but it's first day of spring camp tomorrow. Figured like, let's get a night's sleep in the new spot before bright and early yelling at my guys on the grass.
It's like the day before the first day of school. You done rehearsed it so many days prior to us. That's actually the one day you get to go home a little bit early. We've been waiting on this day for like 2.5-3 months, so we better not screw this one up.
And we always start the story with every guest that we have on, that's a coach, a player. Want to talk a little bit about you and kind of your origin story. You were the Florida Gatorade Player of the Year, and then you played for the Ops. You played for the University of Miami, had a great career there. You head off to the NFL, and then you get into coaching. Talk to us a little bit about kind of your story, and then, you know, ultimately getting into coaching, and we'll kind of, you know, track you through the coaching ranks that you did after.
Oh, yeah, just real quick. I obviously grew up in Miami, played at Booker T. Washington High School, and then went on and played at University of Miami. Played 3 years there, had a chance to play early as a freshman, so that helped me kind of jump my career off and entered the draft after my junior season. Ended up playing 6 years in the league. I drafted to Houston in the second round, spent a couple years there, then went to Tennessee with the Titans. Then did a training camp with the Dolphins, man, and that was kind of like a childhood dream come true. Just to be there for camp and playing preseason games, it was like the best time ever. Then I played a year in Canada, played in the CFL before I knew I wanted to shut it down. And after that, I got right into coaching. I started off at the high school level, man. I coached for my dad, who was a high school coach in Miami, coached for him. And then got my first shot in college coaching as a GA at FIU. It's crazy because I've actually, in some form or fashion, I've worked at just about every school in Florida, right. And it's kind of crazy when I think about it, to be honest with you.
What do you call dad when you're on the staff? Ice, dad, coach?
No, he coached. He's been coached since the time I got in high school. When I got in high school and I started going to school and playing for him, he told you straight up, hey, you know, everybody know I'm your dad and all that, but when you get in school, man, I'm coach. You're gonna be the one of everybody else, and it's stuck. You know, even now to this day, when I call him on the phone, what's up, coach? You good?
And you and I talked about this a little bit. The start of your coaching career, you get your break in with dad back at your alma mater.
Mm-hmm.
But people might think like, hey, it's easier because his dad's a legendary coach down there. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned to me like there's almost like a stigma as a former player. And what are some of those challenges being a former player breaking into coaching that you faced?
It's hard, you know, and being real, man, a lot of times people that have played, especially ones that have played at a high college level and had a chance to go play pro ball, a lot of times you don't really want to start at the beginning. They don't really understand. It's a different skill set between being a coach and being a real good player. You know, I mean, a lot of times the groundwork that you have to put in coaching, a lot of people don't want to do it. So I can get why some people may be hesitant to hire former players, especially the guys that probably played, you know what I mean, played at a high level in college and in the pros, because I've seen some incidences where guys would just assume, like, since I was a player and this is how I did things, and when they got into coaching, they ain't realized that everybody ain't you. Like, you got to know how to help grow other kids that ain't got your ability, that ain't got your attention to detail, and you got to be able to teach that skill as opposed to just expecting them to be able to do it. So I've seen it, so I understand it once I've been in it, but at the time, I could not understand why people wouldn't even like take a phone call for me to be a GA.
Mm. Yeah, because you went back 707 and started in those rankings, then worked your way up.
Yeah, right? I mean, I had to start, man, from scratch. I mean, like, I was begging people, like, man, I want to be a GA. I'll volunteer. I'll do whatever. Like, calling a bunch of people that I played for and stuff like that. But it's amazing, man. The person that gave me the opportunity is the person that I had no connection to, or that I didn't have a background with. It was just a guy that coached against me in college and said, man, I heard great things about you. Would you want to be a GA at FIU? And that was Coach Butch Davis. And he was the first one to really just crack it and jump off the porch with it. And it's crazy when somebody do offer you a job and you get going there, then everybody else who you've been calling for months start to call back and, hey, man, I got this for it, I got that for it. And I'm like, dude, I just begging y'all for anything. I was left on red.
All of a sudden, the phone calls and the text messages aren't being screened anymore.
All of a sudden, the next year after that, man, I got a spot for you. You need to check this out. I'm like, man, I'm riding with Butch, man. I'm good.
What was it like for you the first time? Obviously, a Miami Hurricane played there. First time putting on FSU colors, putting on Florida colors. What has that been like? Just looking in the mirror. I remember Randy Shannon when he came and he was the DC here. And I asked him and he was like, never thought I'd be wearing these colors, but it's all right now.
It's crazy because to be honest with you, like being a Miami guy at the time, like going to Florida State, because I went to Florida State after I was at FIU. Going to Florida State, that was hard. That was a hard transition putting that one on. You know what I mean? And once I got over that hurdle, but when this opportunity came, like I was in a rush to like hurry up and give me all you can give me. Hurry up and give me the most you can give me. Like I didn't think twice about this one. This one just felt
you were trying to put Florida State on twice, huh?
Nah, I ain't gonna say that. I ain't gonna do them like that. It's just it lined up better for me and the fam right now. It did. It lined up.
You make a U-turn on I-10?
Nah, it's crazy because I was actually in Orlando when it happened.
Okay.
So I went, it's actually because I went to check it out. And it was great, man. Like I was all locked in. Man, my wife was good. You know, my brother's there. So my sister-in-law and my wife, they talking about getting cribs next to each other and all that stuff. So they sent me home for a long weekend to kind of get stuff together and kind of work through some stuff. And man, that long weekend, I just never ended up going back.
The longest weekend in Tallahassee history.
end up just staying in Orlando and just going up to Gainesville the next couple of days.
Yeah, I'm about to say, I know your family obviously had a lot of ties in, and I ended up playing with your brother, of course, and I played your dad coached against me at Booker T. I don't know if he was there or not, but just the swagger and the tradition, man, of just Miami football and swag. I feel like I love one that you brought. You gonna be bringing that to the Gators with stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you instill that into your players in this time and air? Do you even want to instill that in them? Like, how's your approach with that kind of, you know, for the swag and stuff like that?
No, I think you got to, man. Like you got to remember what makes you you. You know what I mean? You got to remember it's a reason that you've had success. It's a reason that you've had great stops as a coach, wherever way you've been. Like the first thing I did when I got here, I told the guys, like, man, every position group, they're going to model their coach. You know what I mean? And the way I move and the way I operate, that's how they're going to be, whether they like it or not. That's what they're going to see every day. That's what they're going to be around every day. And I tell them, man, like, man, the way I walk around, the first thing I told them, I said, man, I'm the best DB coach on the planet. And I firmly believe that. And if you don't believe that, then you'll never be. And I tell them they need to have that kind of confidence in the way they play and the way they take the field. They need to feel like they're the best DB in America, you know. And if you don't have that kind of self-belief and that kind of motivation to go work to really be that, and then you're just going to be average, you know. And I tell them, man, I ain't take the job at Florida to be average. Like, hey, I could have took a lot of other jobs. Like, if I was just wanting to be average and not want to compete at the highest level, like, I would have said, no, I'm good, man. I could have went somewhere else. So just preaching that message to them and walking that walk every single day. You know what I mean, being consistent with it, they kind of feeling it now. So, you know, I mean, we've been ramping up. I know tomorrow I'm gonna go to a whole nother level. So I'm gonna really see if they're gonna match my intensity tomorrow like they're supposed to.
Yeah, they've
you're still young, you're still in good shape. Are we a coach with cleats or sneakers on the field? Like if you need to bust a back pedal to show somebody something, do we have cleats on?
So I do sneakers, and I'm gonna tell you why. Okay. When I was in college, my DB coach tore his Achilles. Ooh. And ever since then, I've been scared of a torn fucking Achilles. So I'm scared if I put on cleats, I'm gonna try to do too much, and my body gonna remind me that I ain't really got it like that no more.
Next thing you know, there's eye black on, hey. There's a band on. All of a sudden, you're like,
but I definitely get active though. I definitely get active, and I'm definitely out there. And I definitely move around. I coach with energy. I coach moving from drill to drill. I get out there and I show them. I give examples, but with my shoes I wear, I'm able to do just enough to show them that I can do it and that I used to be able to do it, but enough to protect myself from not going overboard too. But I got two young assistants though that get real active, man. And they put cleats on for me, and they gonna be they definitely gonna be moving at 100 miles an hour. They ready to roll.
Okay.
What's your mindset when you get the Florida job? And a lot of these kids in that DB room are kids that I'm pretty sure you want to recruit at a UCF or a place mm-hmm. that, but these kids are on a higher caliber. Mm-hmm. So when you get the job, what's your mindset when you look at that depth chart on paper?
It's exciting for sure. It's exciting for sure on paper. You know what I mean? The first thing I did was being at different spots, but all in the state of Florida, though. Like, I was never afraid to try to recruit the elite guys, knowing that you couldn't touch them, knowing that you couldn't get them. But I just needed to be a familiar face for times like this. Like, I knew eventually I was going to end up at a spot like this if everything was going how I wanted it to go. So I didn't want to be unprepared, or I didn't want to be a guy that they didn't know or didn't already have a relationship with. So when I got here and I took the job, I looked at the roster, and I'm like, hey, man, these dudes can play. Now, how do we take this thing to the next level? So I get excited and intrigued by it. And then you really dive into it, man, and you watch their games, and when you really study them dudes just want to know how you're going to get them better. And, like, when you come to them with a plan and, like, show them that you took interest in their game, hey, this is what you do really good. All right, this is what we need to work on. All right, I ain't going to mess this up. The stuff up that you do good, I ain't finna screw that up. But we're going to sharpen all the stuff that you need work on, and you need, you know what I mean, need to be a little bit more detailed on. And them guys, man, they like a sponge. Like, in a minute, they know, like, you can help them, and they know you can help get them better, and you got good intentions. I mean, it's been smooth.
That's Coach, what do you look for in a recruit? Obviously, football-wise, what are you looking for? You're looking at mm-hmm. hips, feet, you're looking at the total package, you're looking for a guy that's already has all the skill set, you're looking for a guy that you want to develop. But, like, more than that, like, personality-wise, like, what are you looking for in a player in your backfield?
Yeah, I would say from a skill set standpoint, I look for a couple of things that I think that you really can't coach. It ain't really drills for, like, a lot of stuff that we can get better at. But I look for definitely guys. I need guys that can run. I need some top end speed, guys that can run. It ain't gonna just get blew by no matter how much you teach him. You know what I mean? But I also need guys that's just a magnet to the football. You know what I mean? You watch games and you like, man, how the ball always finding this guy in a positive way, whether it's a bounce, an overthrow, or he punching the ball out. Those kind of stuff like that, I mean, they carry over. Guys is not scared to go play the ball and make plays on the ball. There's probably been the same dude doing that since Little League ball. Like, the guy you go watch on the park, and he always get a pick or a fumble or punching the ball out. That stuff travel with you. I mean, those are one things, but I'm definitely looking for a dominant competitive trait from a personality standpoint. You don't look for the dude that shy away from competition on his team or his neighborhood or whatever. You look for, like, the elite competitors. Win, lose, or draw. Like, dudes that ain't scared if a coach say, man, we're going to go one-on-one rep, man, for sprints or for whatever on the line. You want the guys that's, like, embracing that. Like, man, this got to be me. Like, wherever you're at, this got to be me. You don't want the guy that they got to pull to compete or the guy they got to pull to. That's why we judge track so highly. Like, track is hard. And I know some of the guys shy away from track because it's hard and it can be embarrassing at times. But one thing track don't do is make you compete. And you can't hide behind nobody else because that's you. Like, when you go, stand on the line, that is you. That's you.
Can't blame nobody but you. You slow.
Can't blame nobody but yourself. So if it's even on the relay team, if it's you, that's you.
It's you. Yeah.
So those some of those individual sports that play a huge factor in what we look for.
You mentioned something when I interviewed you. A thrown ball has no destination. I can't remember how you finished it.
Mm-hmm. Like I tell the guys, like, man, the football ain't got no destination, ain't got no coordinates. Like, when the ball is in the air, as a DB, you got to feel like, man, that ball is coming to you. You know what I mean? And we tell the guys all the time, in order to be ball productive, you got to be ball aware. Just remind them that, man, hey, your job is to play the football, just like the receiver's job is to play it. Like, don't think, man, because the ball is in the air, it got to go to the receiver. So a lot of stuff we drill and a lot of stuff we teach is about getting them guys to understand, man, that once that ball leaves the quarterback's hand, like, that's your ball to go get. And that we actually grade that and we actually judge that. Like, We call it having four hands at the football. So when the ball is in the air and it's a DB and a receiver, like, we know the receiver's two hands going up for it. We want to see the DB's same two hands going up for us. So when we pause that thing at the point of contact, we should see four hands attacking the ball. If not, you just out there playing not to get beat. You ain't playing to make the play.
Mm. Lingo. Hey, ball hawking is something that's been missing from like our secondaries. Just turnovers. So outside of just, you know, telling the guys that, what type of drills or type of emphasis you guys are putting on in the spring for us to get that to where it needs to be?
Hold on, I lost the back end of that question. Could you repeat it one more time?
What type of drills, what are you guys emphasizing in camp, like specifically to improve turnovers, us getting the ball back, you know, ball hawking?
Am I the only one that's muted out right now?
Oh, no, you can't hear him?
No, I can't.
Oh, yeah, refresh real quick. Just refresh real quick. It'll be all right. You refresh the browser. Tell him to refresh the browser. He can't hear me.
Yeah, he said refresh the browser if you can't hear him, maybe. All
right.
Yeah. Refresh it.
That he could only not hear Corey, or he could hear you, Jordan.
Yeah, he heard me because he heard me.
I don't know why he could hear me.
You go, Pete sabotaged your mic, Corey. Pete sabotaged your mic.
I'm good. I'm back. Yeah. Right.
I was saying, like, ball hogging has been the thing that we, you know, been lacking the last few years. What are you guys emphasizing in camp for us to get better with just creating turnovers and getting the ball back in as DBs?
Yeah, a couple things. I think the first thing is it's teaching them, you know, I mean, the different opportunities you got to actually go make a play on the ball. And, you know what I mean? And it's an incentive-based system. So we put some incentives in there for them to want to go get the ball. It's small stuff to them nowadays, but, you know what I mean? Right. That used to be a big deal. We try to find stuff that they care about. And right now, these guys care about attention. They care about people seeing them. So something as small as this that we're implementing in our unit room, like, if you get a takeaway in practice, we just get you a framed picture. We get you a framed picture and we hang it up in our position room. All right. So every takeaway you get or you create, we'll frame you a nice picture, hang it up in the position room, and when all the recruits, all the families come through, they get a chance to ask, man, why such and such got 4 or 5 pictures up there on y'all wall? Well, that's every time you got a takeaway in practice. So it kind of incentivized them to get a little bit of attention, to get a little love. That's one thing. And another thing I found is motivating. I started doing this a couple years ago. You repeatedly show their peers doing the action that you're trying to create. Like showing them other guys in our league making plays on the ball. Showing them playing the same coverages that you implement. Showing them making plays, then challenging them to say, hey, this dude over there making his play. All right, if you ain't making it though. If he making it and you ain't making it, then it's going to come a time where it's going to be you and him competing for a job, whether that's at the next level, or whether that's wherever one day, and like, hey, this thing is about producing. So just constantly showing them and constantly keeping them motivated with the drill work. We saying like, hey, I got to take this drill serious, coach, putting in, because I ain't gonna let this dude outdo me that's over here at this spot or that spot. Because I know we all competing for our draft classes or whatever the case may be. So just giving them incentives, but also giving them some peer pressure and some peer motivation. Like, hey, it's a reason we're doing the drills we're doing. It didn't make everything competitive.
And you're gonna get to really coach these guys, but I want to take it back a little bit further because the NCAA calendar is messed up. Tell me about your Disney cruise and how you were able to, you know, kick back and relax, not worry about the job at all, and enjoy it with your family.
Oh man, so that was crazy. So long story short, finishing the season at UCF last year, when we lose our last game and we don't go to a bowl game, my wife had already had it like planned where, all right, if we don't go to a bowl game, we're going to need to do something to just recoup, regroup. We're going to go on this Disney cruise and we'll be gone for 4 days or whatever. All right, cool. She ended up getting the cruise, booking it. And then come time, the week of the cruise, I get the Florida job. I'm like, dang, all right, babe, I'm probably ain't going to go. X, Y, Z, I'm out. I'm chilling. I'm out. So I go to Florida, I report. And at the time, our head coach, because somehow he's still in the playoffs, so he's not there. So we got like a half a staff there, and they give us a schedule. They're like, hey, we out the office all, you know what I mean, all next week. And I'm like, dang, okay, I can go on a cruise. It is what it ain't really nothing else to do. So the day before I go on the cruise, I think the portal opens, or the portal is getting ready to open or something like that. And I'm like, all right, cool, man. And the first thing I was like, right before we got on the boat, I just got a bunch of calls from a bunch of different people and was like, hey, I heard some of you guys may be going in the portal. And I'm like, oh, crap. I'm already on this boat now. I got to work.
What's that Wi-Fi package?
Hey, I went and bought that Wi-Fi package for $300 and sat down in the corner and went to work. I sat on that thing and went to work, man. It was cool though, man. I talked to all the guys, talked to all the people, and the minute I got off that boat and because we left out of Fort Lauderdale, so it was down in South Florida. The minute I got off that boat, I was on a mission. Whoa, I was on a mission, hitting all the guys and doing a lot of meetings and stuff. And before I made it back to game, before I got back in Gainesville, I had multiple meetings with all the guys in my room. So that was helpful.
Yeah. Ruined bingo on the ship. Just trying,
trying to win
bingo, and you got FaceTimes blowing up. Okay, hold on.
Hey, if I didn't get them guys back, man, if we didn't put a lot of work in to get them back, they probably would have threw me off that ship.
Now you'd be on Carnival next year. How you guys doing it this year? Is the safety and corner? Are you guys operating out of the same room, film room? Like, how you doing the meetings and whatnot?
Nah, we gonna keep it split. But you know, what I mean, in the DB unit, what me and Coach Collins is gonna do, like, we feel like that meeting time is big, and we get a chance to be specific and individualized, but we're going to cross over in the walkthroughs and all the extra bonding time we get with the guys. That's when we do a lot of our crossover work, because we still recruit the room together. You know what I mean? We make sure we're going after the top guys and just using all our resources we can and all our connections. And then when guys get here, you know what I mean, we meet separate. But you know what I mean, we do hit the field a lot on our own as a DB unit and do our own, like, walkthroughs and do our own coaching sessions and stuff. So they get a chance to be a group too a lot of the time, and not just feel like it's corners and safeties. But we do split for the meetings, but we come together a lot on the field and just work together.
And what's the dynamic with you and Coach Wilkins and Coach Collins? Because I know Coach Wilkins will have nickels and Coach Collins obviously safeties. You guys have to play as one, but you're also doing different work. How does that work in the meeting rooms and then tomorrow on the grass?
Yeah, it's unique. You know, our nickels operate with our safeties a little bit more than our corners. So Coach Wilkins and Coach Collins work directly together on a day-to-day basis, you know. And me, I work directly with Coach Jaron Moore, who came from Tulane, who's also a South Florida native. And also I got a student assistant, Coach Quincy Wilson, who also is a former Gator that played here. So we got a lot of knowledge in between those two rooms. And a lot of guys. That's why I say Quincy them got cleats on. I let them have the cleats. We got way more than enough guys who can still get out there and get active. You know what I mean? They're doing a wonderful job of blending together and working. We all got different strengths and stuff, even from Coach Collins and Coach Wilkins. We all from different places. So we just use our different strengths to work together.
Not to make you feel old, because I covered Quincy when he was mm-hmm. in high school, but Jordan younger than Quincy on that same university school team.
I know that is pretty crazy. Trust me, I know Quincy already made me feel low. He told me all the times when he was in middle school that his dad used to bring him to Miami to watch me practice. And I'm like, all right, yeah, dude, I got it.
For real though, yeah, Quincy definitely his dad definitely done groomed him up for that job right there. I know he definitely. Yeah. Not to say he know it all at this point. Obviously, he's still learning, but he got some stuff for you. I'm sure he helped you out
He's doing a phenomenal job, man. And what he's embracing now is the same thing we all had to embrace, like the role of a coach. Like all the stuff that people don't realize you got to put in, you got to go through. First, you got to learn how to be a babysitter first. That's a crazy thing. You got to learn how to be a babysitter when you're a coach. You got to babysit guys. You woke yet? You up? You ate breakfast? You did this? You got tape? He's like, Coach, I don't remember a coach having to do this for me. I'm like, hey,
nah, but I believe you. They did. They're remembering it differently.
But I'm enjoying it. We basically got six defensive back coaches. It's kind of crazy though, the amount of hands on deck that we have to mm-hmm. get these guys all the resources and the help they need.
Mm-hmm. So how does it change?
Go ahead.
Now, I was going to ask some stuff just about like what you prefer about DB. You can take off. I might get off subject for y'all.
Oh, no. Ain't no off subject. We just vibing and hanging out a little bit. Using Grinch's defense last year, schematically, mm-hmm. how different is it just from a defensive back standpoint and Brad White's defense?
Like coaching and Coach Grinch's defense last year, that was something that was completely new for me. Like, of all my experience as a player, coach, that was my first time being in the type of scheme that he had. And I embraced it, and it was really good for our guys. Like, they did a really good job. I mean, we had really good production. I mean, our DBs played freely. They was able to play aggressive. They made plays on the ball. It was physical and made tackles. Like, I loved it. You know what I mean? Coming from something I'd never been in before to doing that, I was like, Coach, this is really good stuff. And I told him, like, this is stuff I will always carry with me. And Coach White's system, it takes me back to a lot more of my NFL days and a lot of stuff that we ran and a lot of different teams that I was on, because he has an NFL background and NFL mindset. But it's a lot of the same concepts, a lot of the same terminology that we have from my time in the league. So it just took some digging to resurface some things in my brain. And I'm excited about this too, because he definitely is a defensive coordinator that takes the corner position serious and takes in consideration on how we can help those guys be successful.
Yeah. Is the defense more man? Is more zone? Obviously, it's going to depend, but what's kind of the tendency that you guys have?
You know, I think as every defensive coordinator would tell you, they got to wait and see what we got and what we do well before they can say what we're going to hang our hat on, because at the end of the day, we ain't touched the grass yet. We think we know what our guys got the potential to be. But hey, until we get out there and we see it consistently in the receiver room we got here right now, that they'll let us know real quick what kind of defensive back unit we gonna be. So we gonna find by Saturday, we gonna know what it is.
looking at your room, there's a lot of guys. I think it's a young room, but some of those guys have played. Like Jabari Flowers, I think, was probably on track to redshirt because of some injuries. He got some experience. But you get, you know, CJ Brano, CJ Hester, young guys. Dijon Johnson's back from his injury. It happened against Miami last year. And then some other guys on his Conan Bonney. What do you think of the room? I can't forget Cormani McClain, probably someone you've known for a while. But what do you think of the room? And what are you looking to see from them tomorrow, like you said? Because what we see on film might be different than what we see on the grass tomorrow, Thursday, Saturday.
I think it's a real talented room. You know, I think none of the guys in the room, as much talent as they have, none of them have reached the potential that they can reach if they put it all together. And I think that's the most exciting part about them, because they've played, they showed flashes, they got you excited, but they haven't even scratched the surface as far as ability and consistency and what they can be. And the thing that I'm enjoying about them the most is they've kind of bought into the workman mentality. When I say these guys put in a ton of work after hours, these guys put in a ton of work. You know, you can't, you got to run them out of the building. I literally had to run them away from the field today. I'm like, dude, we starting spring practice tomorrow. We done been grinding and working for 2 months. I don't need y'all out here tonight running extra drills or trying to do this, extra this and extra that. Not tonight. Tonight is about being fresh and being excited for tomorrow. So I think it's going to be probably, obviously, besides probably one other position, probably the most competitive position battle on our team, in my opinion.
Which position?
Corner.
The corner room.
Oh, he's saying, what's the other one? He said, what's the other one in your opinion?
The other one's going to be it's a toss-up between some other things. But I know our room going to be ultra-competitive.
They almost walked you right into that one.
them guys, they done got that in their mind, though. They're like, Coach, I know it's going to be competitive. And it's like, and we change our lineup every day just for the competition factor and the guys to understand, like, it's a true battle in this room. So it'll be interesting to see who stand out.
You guys went and got Jordy Lowry from East Carolina. What'd you see in him out of the portal?
Had a history with Jordy. Recruited him a little bit coming out of high school initially. And then I was at FAU when he came out of the portal out of Western Carolina before he went to ECU. And we had several really good conversations and thought he probably would come to FAU at the time. And then I ended up taking the UCF job and he ended up going to ECU. So he was a guy I had tracked for a while. But again, played a lot of ball, played over 1,200 career snaps, played at a high level. So I think he's a guy that can come in. We needed that experience. We needed that guy that I'm played and I've been through some stuff. And that also was happy to be a Gator. You know what I mean? It wasn't a guy that was out saying I'm trying to break the bank or trying to do nothing crazy. But because I played at different levels, but I want a chance to be a Gator. I got the experience. I believe in you as a coach and y'all, you guys' system. So He's been doing a good job though, just like a steady veteran. You know, it's like a silent pickup, week two or three pickup in NFL free agency, just silent, but gonna be a good player.
Yeah. I like what we did in the portal with that, man. I like the way we ain't go real commercial and try to overspend on stuff. You got guys mm-hmm. who, like you said, want to come in and be a Gator. That's going to make mm-hmm. you feel harder than a dude who is just bad chasing. Maybe we lose one or two games and them boys feeling like, man, I'm here for the bag anyway, and I ain't even finna play hard. Nah, I got a dude that's going to play whether we win or lose, and he going to play hard because he playing for everything, yeah. not for some money and for some potential, whatever we could be. So I love that of what we did in the portal. Obviously, retention was probably a little expensive, but
yeah, retention. But you like retention gonna be what it is. Like, but at least you know what you're getting. You know what you're getting from you guys. And I think that was the best part about what we did. Like, and obviously we explored options with DBs and stuff like that. But everybody we talked to, we were very honest about the position of our room. Like the guys we got in the room. We feel very strong about them. We like where we at. Yeah, you guys can come in and compete and shake this thing up. You can make us better. But we really, really like the retention we had in this room, man. I thought some conversation didn't go so well after that. You know what I mean? That's okay, too. But, like, hey, the only thing we can do is just lay the situation. Because if I lie to you and say, oh, man, you going to come. You're going to be better than him. You this, you that. One, I'm lying. Two, a player should never want to play for me if I'm telling you this. And three, when you get here and that ain't the case, You're gonna hate it. You ain't gonna want to be here. So, but everything, but you when you come, you're gonna know everything I told you, that the room is what it is.
Some guys just wanted you to talk a little sweeter to them.
I think that's everywhere though. I think especially in the portal, everybody's scared in the portal. Like a lot of these guys, they think they love the portal, but they are scared to death when they're in it now. When they're in the portal, y'all should hear some of these conversations, the guys in the portal and some of the questions they ask. And I'm like, dude, you know I can't promise you that, or I can't ask you that mm-hmm. because why would I leave this spot? I don't know. You asked yourself that before you got in the portal.
Right, y'all? I didn't talk to the compliance for you. You
I know. Like, what you mean, Coach? You think I was starting here where I was at? You think why would I come over there? You know what I mean? Y'all got this and y'all got that. Well, I don't know why you got the problem. I'm just telling you what we got.
One of those guys did not go in the portal. He's from the crib. Ben Hanks, I know you know his dad. Uh-huh. I'm sure you know Ben well. Played at Booker T. What's it like to get to coach the son of your friend, get to be a part of his development, part of his journey?
Oh, coaching Ben is like full circle for me. Like when I was a kid, very very young, my dad was on the staff at Miami High where Ben Senior went to high school at, and I was that young kid running around on the field and watching Big Ben play and looking up to him in the neighborhood and stuff like that. And then Ben, little Ben, he's same thing. Like he was a small kid when I was running around playing high school ball and college ball and stuff. His older brother is my best friend. We've been best friends since 5 years old. You know what I mean? Like we're really, really tight. And to be able to coach his little brother and to be able to pour into his development in college, I think is personal for me. You know what I mean? But it's going to be exciting, but also have to remind myself also like don't cheat him out of experience and make sure I'm still carrying on in a way where he's still getting a full experience and he's still getting coached the same way he would get coached if I just met him last week. So that I just have to friendly remind myself that too.
What Trey say when you called him about the job?
Oh, he called me. And we talked about 2 days ago. Now it's crazy because like Tria, he left such a mark on this place here for whatever reason. I don't know, some good, some bad. We all know he had a lot of ups and downs here, but super, mm-hmm. super, super, super competitive, super, super big heart.
That boy was that boy. Nah,
super competitive, super big heart. He is the real. He's to me, and people hate me for saying this. They think I'm biased. I say he's the best high school football player in Dade County history. To me, me personally. Not many people have put together the resumes that he's put together. And
I thought it was because he was in my generation. I was like, when it was high school, bro. Yeah,
he was hooping in high school. He was absolutely electric.
Book is looking like, I don't know what. That's what I felt like that where Blur came from.
I'm telling you, man. Like the stuff that this dude was able to do and the stuff that he did, like, is still unmatched. But I get here, I called him because when I got here, everybody comes to me like, oh, you're Treon's brother. It's like, dude, you some type of celebrity around here or something, dog? Like, man, everybody looking at me like, hey, I'm just a side piece. And I called him. I was like, all right, man, you got to come to practice, man. You got to get up here. You got to come to practice. Everybody asked him. She's like, all right, I'll be up there. So it's pretty cool, though, to be honest with you, though. Like, when you the older sibling, but you're still in that shadow a little bit, that's pretty cool.
That's dope.
Yeah, I was going to ask you just how you feel about just a DB situation. Like, I look at a DB like Christian Gonzalez in the league. He ain't attached to a lot of picks, but he going to make sure that ball broken up every time when it comes to it. There's like a ball hawk type of DB. I just want to see kind of which one you prefer. The ball hawk kind of guy who going to gamble and go for the interception, just a more conservative DB who always just going to get it out of that pocket.
If Christian Gonzalez is the conservative one, I want him. Then I want whatever he is. Yeah, we can get some of them. I would love to have a couple of those on our roster.
But that's just how I feel about him. When I watch him, I think I'd be like, "Yo, you don't never go for the pick. He's been in the basket every time, just knocking out."
But I think, you know, I mean, you're gonna in a room. We talk about putting together that room, right? And I always tell people you're going to have a bunch of different toys, man, a bunch of different guys in that room with a bunch of different skill sets. And you're going to have some, gamblers. You're going to have some guys that go jump something and go take a chance and go make a play and win your game. But you also got to realize what's going to come with that too is some of them gambles, they're going to come out on losing end on some of them gambles. So you got to weigh it out. That's why you can't have a room full of them. I mean, if you got one or two guys, you're like, hey, this guy gonna win us a couple of games because he gonna go get the ball, he's gonna take a shot. But you can't have everybody doing it.
Yeah,
like you need some of them just consistent guys. Yeah,
everybody can't be throwing dice. Then all of a sudden you got too many sevens coming out.
And I'm telling you, but that's all a part of putting the room down. When you're recruiting, you know that. You're like, hey, this guy right here is a different maker. Now, nine times out of ten, we're gonna be happy he did it. But it's gonna be that one or two times that you know it's gonna hurt us. Now we just gotta make sure we teach that guy not to hurt us at crucial moments. Right. Like, okay, early in game, first quarter, early down, you see something and it happened and it didn't play out. Cool. Hey, but it's fourth quarter. We need that stop. And this ain't the time for you to be sitting on a hitch route and it's third and ten. Now, I mean, this ain't the time. Yeah. So just teaching guys and reeling them in. And that's one thing that guys get confused too. Like when you tell them, like, man, you try to get them to play discipline, try to get them to play with technique. They try to turn it against you. Oh, coach, you want me to be a robot. Nah, I don't want you. I don't want you to be no robot, but I also don't want you to go out there and get us killed either. So we're gonna be smart in the way we take chances.
I don't want you jumping the double move with 6 minutes left and we're up 13. All of a sudden it's a 6-point game.
Exactly. And getting them to understand that how those things change games, but getting them to take calculated risks and knowing when you can, knowing at what moments, okay, man, I can take a chance. And then knowing that the players you're playing with too, your safeties and your other guys, knowing that when you're going to take this chance, it's lined up. I look at myself in college. There were times where I took chances, but you better know, like, my safeties knew, hey, when I was going to take that chance and when I was probably going to try to go for something. Oh, I had somebody to try to cover me to have my back.
Yeah.
I love it. You guys have any more questions before we let Brandon get some well-deserved rest before practice starts tomorrow?
Nah, man, that's it, man.
8 o'clock tomorrow. I'm going to let Quincy know. I don't know that he has the same hip flip. I don't know if he's got the same back pedal. See if I can just get into him a little bit before practice starts tomorrow.
Hey, Quincy actually asked me today. He said, Coach, what pair of cleats should I wear tomorrow? I say, man, whatever pay you decide to wear, you better make sure all our guys had the right equipment on first before we run on that field. So you figure out your cleats.
I was telling Quincy that he thought he could press me at the line. It would never happen. I think I want to end it at talking. I don't know that I want to push him to the point where we're actually doing a one-on-one, but it was fun.
I'm gonna just give you a heads up before you talk trash to him tomorrow. The dude still do workouts like he's still playing in the league.
Yeah,
I tried to lift with him the other day, and I was like, Quincy, you got an hour long weight room session, man. I ain't working out of no weight room for no hour no more. I'm 20 minutes. If you whatever I can't get in 20 minutes, I don't need it. I'm out.
Yeah.
You were here for a whole hour. I'm straight.
He was trying to get me to do those. They were doing 110s last year before practice. Like, yo, you gotta come out and do that. I'm like, buddy, I'm 37 and overweight. We're not doing 110s. No, thank you.
No, we don't slow it down. Now I turned all the guys into distance runners, just so you know. So Quincy had never run. He had never run, I think, more than 2 miles before he started working with me. And now I got him running 3-4 miles every morning. Can't get enough of it.
That's crazy.
Well, appreciate it, though, fellas, man. Definitely appreciate you guys. Yeah,
best of luck this offseason. We appreciate you, and go Gators.
Go Gators.
Got to clip that for all the Miami fans.
He was good. I got the chance to talk to him, and I think he's pumped about the room. It was super interesting. He brought it up, which is why I brought it up then just now. I didn't know the connection with Ben Hanks. Didn't even like put it together like from the crib. And then obviously Treon too. But yeah, that's a legendary family in Miami County. And all of
I still down there getting busy, man.
Legendary.
Yeah, Mater Day or something like that.
Yeah, man. Ice them coached at every school in day at this point, bro. It was a straight up legend.
If he wants to come up to Brian,
Treon hasn't got into like coaching yet, man. The whole family's doing it, right?
Tough one.
Okay.
A youngest kid thing, man.
Yeah, that was about to say. He's a special one. That's for boy. I love him to death. I mean,
we need to get him on the show, Jordan.
I'll try.
Bro, Jordan's giving big Pete Nakos what's up Corey vibes when you're asking about what Trey
yeah.
All right.
I think we just let that one stay where it is. That one.
That was hilarious. What's up, Corey?
Like he immediately began. Like it was almost out of fear. Like please don't call me on my shit. Today
I was waiting. I was like, "Oh, he's gonna say hi, man. Nick, and hi, Jordan, too." It was, "Hey, Dan, Corey."
Yeah, I saw her, Dan, Corey. I was like, "Okay, I guess I'm not
Nick,
here."
I was waiting on him to say Jordan and Nick.
I was waiting.
Yeah. No, all good, man. Shout out to Pete, babyface Pete.
He was real professional. I liked what he came on.
Real professional.
Pete's great at what he do, man.
He is absolutely. We got some numbers. Some guys wearing one. Nick's got a funny story. Trey Wilson going from 8-1.
Oh, you talking about VB3 or you talking about
Vernell Brown?
You said Trey Wilson. Wilson.
Sorry. Trey Wilson is not on our
Trey Wilson is number three.
I didn't know what was going on.
Sorry. Vernell Brown the third goes from 8-1. He makes the Percy switch from freshman to sophomore year.
I heard he wanted three though, right?
No, he did not want three. So I'm doing.
You just said
series.
This last week, bro.
No. I'm doing a series with these
Nick,
guys.
Nick, somebody called you out in my group chat.
Yeah.
My buddy Ross.
Ross.
He didn't want that number. I thought he was happy with the number that he had.
He didn't.
This is a time for you to come clean. This is a show where we need to,
he has
accountability, man. Accountability is key, man.
I'm your accountability.
I'm pulling up a little picture.
Whoa.
Hold on. All right, so we're doing I'm doing a series, video series. We're interviewing. We did Tommy Houck. We did Dallas Wilson. We did VB3. We did VB3 and Dallas Wilson the same week. Talked to both of them. I'm currently having to edit out VB3's conversation. Asked him about number change because I said, when we first talked, you weren't super stoked about 8. You wanted 1, didn't get it. Me and Zach Albaverde were talking to you and we're like, hey, Percy Harvin started at 8, flipped to number 1. VB3 gave me this story about, nope, making 8 my number. That it is what it is. I was like, all right, cool. Sticking with 8. Dallas Wilson did his. He signed his name on this little on these little desks that we do the interviews on. Signed it Dallas Wilson 3. I was like, yo, are you switching numbers? He said, yeah, it's 3. So I'll show my work.
Mm.
Show my work here.
I thought we had insider information, bro.
That's Dallas Wilson, number three. That's VB3, number eight. Right there, you got Dallas Wilson, number three. VB3, number eight.
I don't see a date. I don't see a date on it.
Yeah, he makes a good point, Nick.
Something.
I need a copy of today's newspaper.
For sure.
Come out here looking foolish. That won't be not the first time. Won't be the last. Got me out here looking foolish.
That's become a once a week thing here. I have an issue correction.
Sell the segment. If you would like to sponsor the Nick Was Wrong segment, we will take your money.
It's going to be our most expensive segment. It's the longest and most exhaustive. That
Dan's got a house to buy, and it will be a recurring segment.
Let's run through some of these numbers. I know this is if you're watching on YouTube or X. But we got a bunch of new numbers. We're not going to go through all of them. Jaden Woods moves to number zero.
I like that.
Vernell Brown, Bryce Thornton are number one. Eric Singleton, number two. Tramell Jones moves to number nine. Just going to run through some.
I got a better one here, Dan. I got a better one. Let me share that tab.
Ooh, gross with 18.
Move that.
Gross. Boom. That's what's gross. Right. That numbers is gross.
Nick, how is that any better? It like looks better picture wise.
Way better.
Yeah. All right. Way so
it's in order.
I like this better. I'm be honest. It looks better.
Mine
better.
Was also in order. We have a great social media person that put it all in order for us.
Oh, can they do the jerseys next time?
Yeah.
We don't pay him enough to do that, Corey. We want to up the bag. Hezzy Kent. Everybody's wondering where he would end up. He's number 86. Comes in at, what was it, 313 pounds?
313. It's a big time.
That's in March. I don't think he was 313 when he got here, fellas.
No. That's a big tight end.
Very big tight end. Someone's that stick out here, Will Griffin, number 11. I think that's the number he wore in high school as well.
It is, yeah. Aaron Filo, 12. Filo, 12.
That was another one. We had an event, and he was signing his name, and he was signing Aaron Filo, 12. And I was like, oh, did you get your jersey? And he was like, I haven't talked to anybody about my jersey. I was like, that might be a weird autograph, like the ones I just showed. Weird autographs now. And Aaron Williams, who was a walk-on quarterback, had number 12. And I was like, oh, might be a little like NFL situation where you pay. He goes, I won't pay. I'll wear number whatever. And I was like, what if they want to give you number 36?
Like, number 36 is open.
Well, so no, 12 stays.
Might stay open.
Yeah, but you can go check out the Stadium and Gale social media or the Florida Gators social media if you want a prettier version.
I can't wait to see Kent tomorrow in 86.
He's be a big dude.
It's going to be crazy. I got to see it in person.
Nick's muted. Nick, you're speechless. Right.
At 313, I think that's more of a 56, 66, 76 than an 86, but we will see.
Yeah, so spring practice starts tomorrow. We'll have a lot more on spring practice next week. We are the only podcast with somebody that will be live and attending. So we'll have more of an update. The first couple practices, of course, are just going to be in shorts and shirts and then shells and then start to get into full pads. When do they get into full pads, Nick?
So they're in like spiders, which is like just like minimal pads. Kind of looks like a shoulder pad. Yeah. Same thing. Spiders will be Tuesday, Thursday, and then you can wear shoulder pads on Saturday. I don't know what I'll be at every practice. I don't know what the media schedule is. I'll be at everything. I don't know if Saturdays are open or closed, but I'll be there.
Okay.
Looking forward to that first full day of pads, which I think will be probably the second Thursday, if not the next Tuesday.
So Brandon Harris. Oh, go ahead.
What's the status update on Dallas Wilson in spring? You had any information on that?
Yeah, I think he'll be non-contact or limited for the first week. I think he'll be okay, though.
Any other injury concerns to be worried about?
Cam James will be limited. He had shoulder surgery after the season. It was funny when I was talking to him for his coming back to Florida story. I was like, "Oh, what was that first meeting with John Summerall like?" He was like, "I was in post-op. I wasn't there for it." I was like, "Oh yeah." A typical end of the year, end of football season. Doctor's office has a line out the door, Jordan.
Uh-huh. I get it cleaned up.
Well, perfect. Brandon Harris said that he thinks the DB room will be one of the top two rooms as most competitive. What do you guys think the other room is?
That was some good news to hear, though. I like that.
I think he meant to say quarterback and then realized, I probably shouldn't say quarterback.
Yeah.
Corey almost got him.
So I almost got him. He tried to get by. I said, what's the other room there, player?
There are 225s. They just haven't changed. Anthony Rubio, 25 on offense. Probably the best running backs ever wear 25. And then Cormani McClain, 25 on defense.
Rubio, man.
The Rubio can vibe in the 2-5. He good with me.
Yeah,
I don't think, man.
Stay on his dad's good side.
He's got a career touchdown.
Next thing you know, you got a cruise missile at your door. Cruise missile.
Shout out to Marco. He's probably not been
listening to the show the last couple weeks. I think he's been busy, but he's a Steve Miguel listener.
Yeah, you good.
Probably a little too busy for the pod.
Who knows? Yeah. You never know. In this situation,
what if our podcast is being played on Air Force One?
Oh,
possible.
There's a non-zero possibility that Stadium and Gale has been played on Air Force One.
Now, if Rubio and somebody from the Air Force One wanted to come on the pod, what do we do?
They can do whatever they want, brother.
I mean,
you know,
people are like, "Oh, Dan, what's your opinion?" I'm like, "Well, I'll have an opinion when I get asked by a head of state or a secretary."
Hey, man, we live, man. Y'all boys tap in, same corner, same time, man.
Appreciate you guys. Let's wrap up the show here. We appreciate Pete Nakos and Brandon Harris for joining us. This show is going to have a couple of big interviews over the next couple of weeks. I was talking to Joe Cohen. He wants to come on the show.
So let's do it.
He'll be on the show in the next couple of weeks. CC Jefferson's going to be on the show on the next. A lot of coaches and a lot of people that we have lined up after the season or after the spring, and then throughout spring practice, we'll get you guys some player interviews. So we're super excited about that. One time for our friends over at Alumni Hall, go visit alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville on Archer Road, the largest selection of Florida Gators wear in all of Gainesville. So that's alumnihall.com or Alumni Hall on Archer Road. Let's get out of here, boys. Corey, you want to do a song of the week? We've kind of been intermittent on songs of the week recently.
Yeah, why not? Let me see what I got. What I've been listening to lately. Check my podcast. Hey,
I know, Jordan, Carl's got some stories.
Oh, Carl got a few stories for us. He may
be. XCC.
Will he be able to tell them all? I don't know. But
statute of limitations is gone.
That's why I say I'm going to let him.
Been through four coaches since then. Statute of limitations is gone.
Yeah. I'm going to let him rock out, but will he tell him is to be determined. I think he will, though.
One of the coaches is retired now. We're so fine to tell the
story. Come on. That's what I'm saying. Just have at it. He has a few, though, I'm sure.
Bro, I'm following him. He is going to, the corner store with his Meta glasses on.
Yo.
Saying, I'm going to rob the place. And they're like, CeCe, get out of here. He's like,
okay. Yeah, come on. Everybody in Baker County knows who you are. You come on. But he's funny, man. He's on Instagram and he's doing his thing. I'm liking to see him try to, build and do something. You know, most of these guys just kind of hop in the shell and be afraid. But he's full out with it, man. He has his little hashtag 96 laughs and he's making his little funny videos and doing what he wants to do. So I'm happy for him, man. I mean, it ain't the most professional, but my boy having a good time.
That's all that matters, man. Enjoying himself, dog.
For sure, man. Be happy.
Let me get Malls Monday is his name. Song is Pressure. M-A-L-Z. Monday.
Oh, gotcha. I spelt it like a shopping mall. Awesome. Well, we appreciate everybody for watching, tuning in. Before you leave, if you can hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the retweet, repost, whatever they call it now, button as well. It helps us grow the show. We look forward to seeing you guys each and every Monday. And next week, we'll start breaking down practice. We appreciate you guys for joining. We'll see you next week.